Okay, so I guess this is the first episode then of our of a new podcast series, hopefully.
As of yet untitled.
It was literally got Matt Sanchez over here. I'm Andy Kutkowski, and Matt, tell us what you're doing today.
Me personally,
Yes.
I took the customs broker license exam.
Exciting.
Yeah, it was 4 hours of customs regulations and law and all that fun stuff.
Sure, and we'll come back to that in a moment. And you had posted on Facebook that you had just or you were about to take the test. I was deep in the middle of some training at work, and I was like, I need some stress relief. I'm sure Matt does too. Let's do a podcast, and thus this thing was born. Probably too fast and too little idea, but we'll see how it goes.
Well, we'd kind of been talking about it for a while, I think, too.
Yes, we have. You had been doing blogging on your own, like what is it? It's a blogger account,
WordPress.
WordPress, yeah. And talk a little bit about that for a second. It's called a D. What is it? R. ROC.
D66ROC.wordpress.com. It's been pretty slow for the past, I guess, almost a year now, but my life has just been a crazy ride for the past year and a half, 2 years or so. But when I moved back to Japan about a year and a half ago, I kind of got back into playing Japanese role-playing games, and so I started blogging about it because it's kind of what I wish I had done when I was living over there before. And I was trying to write about them and play them, and write about my experiences with them as much as I can. But now that I'm back, it's hard to do that because I'm not playing them so much anymore.
You're sort of doing real world stuff now too, including this test, which is basically the a test for your career. Make or break test for your career. So yeah, it's I remember you're wanting to help out on things. I'm like, yeah, I'll totally get your help as soon as you finish your test. You're like, yeah. So and I as well. I've been doing that JRPG, J-RPG website. I've had it registered forever. It originally was just a place where I would buy games and just like scan some pictures and post them and maybe talk a little bit about them. Then later on, I decided I want to get. Well, I just kind of inexplicably met Aaron and some others, Aaron Clooney, sort of partner in crime for Made, and I wanted to basically get out there and meet more people. So I created sort of a half blog, half forum of sorts. The only thing is, I guess it kind of lacked focus. I wanted it to be, I wanted to have people step up, and even if they, the criteria I was looking for was people that could speak or and read Japanese and had the games, or else people that could read just a very little bit of it but had a game or two and they wanted to talk about it. However, what happened was I got a very few people who could contribute, and a lot of people who were very interested and it was very cool, who wanted to kind of just come into the forum and look and stuff, but it was very hard to tell who was who. So I kind of pulled back and decided to make it a blog, which I then didn't update for like just about a year, which is very, very infrequently. So yeah, I
And
think
actually, when you did that, then I was kind of I wasn't sure what kind of direction I wanted to go with my blog, and that was about the time that I was moving back and everything too, so
So I was thinking, let's try to maybe get this JRPG thing going again, and between the two of us, either contributing articles or even doing a small podcast for a few minutes every once in a while. We'll at least have some content and keep folks interested.
Since I've moved here to Atlanta, I have been starting to meet a whole lot more people that are, starting to find this stuff online and starting to get interested, and yeah, so I hopefully it'll start taking off soon.
Excellent. So, we know each other. I don't think everyone knows who we are, so we can probably go ahead and do a small introduction. And talk about what we do and stuff like that. But I'm Andy Kutkowski. I'm the guy who produced the Made RPG, and as I will never claim the real heavy lifting for it, Aaron Clooney did all the real work of translation. I just did localization, a little bit of translation and publishing, and then I translated almost entirely and then published Tenra RPG or to, excuse me, Tenryu Bansho Zero, the super Japanese themed RPG that I've been working on forever.
Yes.
That just funded on Kickstarter.
An explosive Kickstarter campaign it was too.
Yeah. Yeah, I could talk about that. Well, maybe in another thing, but just very brief. It ended at almost 130,000, and my goal was 9,000, which is means I get 9,000 from other people. I would contribute like 14,000 of my own money, and I thought I was going to be begging people, you know, at the end of a month, that I'd be like at 7,000, going please, and I got double funded the first day.
Nice.
And what about you, man? Let's hear about what you do.
I'm Matt Sanchez. I met you when I was working on just a fan translation of a game Shinobi Gami a couple years ago, and I had some questions about it, about, you know, the translation itself, and we just started talking, and then I've been working on Ryutama with you.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we'll be getting that out sometime in a few months or something. Sometimes soonish, but otherwise, I do customs as my day job, and then when I'm not doing that, I have my head in the clouds and thinking about role playing games and miniature wargaming and cool ninja fights in my head and stuff like that. So.
Cool, we decided to form a little company of sorts after Tenra, basically. At one point, I was thinking Tenra is going to be it. It's the only game I'm going to produce, and that's going to be all. More than just weariness battering me back down and wanting to do more, is just more like, you know, there's all these games coming out that are just awesome that I just really want to be a part of. So I helped you with some bits, but again, it's more like, you know, you're doing most of the heavy lifting. I'm like, here, I'll contribute lots of charts and background information, stuff like that. So we're going to be doing Ryutama, which is mostly translated. It just needs basically layout editing, probably a little more content, and then more editing. And then hopefully we'll maybe, once Tenra has been fulfilled, we'll probably start on that Kickstarter immediately. And then a project which is currently unnamed, which you will be announcing
very soon. In like two and a half weeks, less than that, 2 weeks.
Yeah, the Japanese company who produced it will be sending you to Spiel Essen in Germany.
Yes.
Which is crazy. So what was the deal there? It's like you pay for the ticket, they pay for your stay or something?
Yeah.
That's really cool. I mean, I've been to Europe once, and Spiel Essen is sort of like the Gen Con of Germany. It's going to be... It's gonna be crazy, I imagine.
It's like 127,000 people there or something. Yeah,
that's like four times Gen Con, man. That's crazy.
I was crazy. And I was at Dragon Con last month, and I think that was like 70,000 or something.
Wow,
a number that I heard, and I was like, man, I can't breathe just walking down the hall. Imagine what Spiel is gonna be like.
Exactly, and most of it's gonna be in German too, so that's gonna be interesting.
Yeah, but you know a lot of Germans, from what I understand, have, you know, really good grasp of great English.
Mm-hmm.
So, and hopefully I'm going to have a really good time doing a lot of demos for them and stuff. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I hear that too. And I imagine that the people involved in games, I was told this by a friend who has a little store in Germany, who just picked up a bunch of copies of Tenra, saying that he was looking for promo materials and stuff. And he was, I was like, hey, you know, why don't we do this in German? He's like, oh, actually, it's totally cool. You know, they speak English over there. And yet, I guess just get nervous because, you know, how many people, like, I don't know if around your business, but when people talk about Japan, they always, oh, yeah, everyone knows English over there. And I'm like,
Yeah,
maybe everyone that they brought out to interact with you knows English, but yeah. And when you're in Spiel, you're going to do some demos of the game and then officially announce the property that will be announced there.
Yes. I'm extremely excited about it. You know, I've been biting at my chains just to be able to talk about this project for the past year. But, you know, it's just, it's been, we haven't been at that stage yet.
Yeah. We just, aren't able to talk about Shinobi Gami yet. I mean,
well, the ninja game is what I guess I
the game we can't announce, but that everyone totally knows what it is. And that's interesting because that's how I met you over that game then. Mm-hmm. Which was fairly interesting because at that point, I guess we're both aware of it, and you had already starting to make four leaps in your translation. I was basically, you were doing all the core rules, I was doing all the extra stuff basically to fill out the book, things like the name lists, the quote unquote alignments and stuff like that. You had already done we could probably talk about that later if we do a special ninja game themed thing. Because there's so much to talk about. It's so interesting on cultural and linguistic levels of what happened on the project. Mm-hmm. So tell me before we we'll talk about like I'll have you pick a game and we'll talk about it. But so you're doing customs broker work. Tell us a little bit about that because I think most people are if they see our names associated with RPG projects, they just kind of think, oh, that's what he does. No, that's not how we keep our families fed.
Not even. customs brokering, it sounds kind of boring, but it's actually really, really interesting. As I found out, I just started this job like a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. But basically, the company that I work with, we ship big machines, like big machining machines for making car parts or airplane parts and stuff like that. You know, they're like humongous, like 20-ton things. And so we in Japan, they crate them up and that's us doing the crating. Mm-hmm. We put them on a ship and we get them into America. And then, we take them off the ship and we ship them to their factory where they're headed. Mm-hmm. But it's a very complicated process just to get them off. The whole thing is extremely complicated, but just to get them off the ship and into America, there's lots of regulations and rules and there's just lots of laws and
I guess a lot of those laws are meant to protect, right? Just so you don't have a machine filled with asbestos and
exactly.
Children bits or something.
But not only that, but also customs is a very interested in making sure that the correct revenue is being collected.
Yes, for tariffs and the like, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So if you basically had a giant ship or a giant whatever those shipping crates, mm-hmm. and you mismarked them, mm-hmm. because like for example, you're like, I don't know what this part is. This is close enough, right? It's sort of like a sewing machine, and it wasn't. Yeah, like the government would probably be missing out on a bunch of tariffs, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then if they found out about it, ship it back, and maybe it's 20-ton machines. You have to ship it back from the factory back to the port, so that customs, can do their thing, and then you have to do this and that or whatever, and it's really complicated, and it's tough because every single thing that's out there in the world has a number, basically, even between these machines, vertical drilling machines have a completely different number than horizontal lathes and stuff like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
And to layman, they're just all things that cut up things into smaller pieces of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, wow. So you probably have to learn far more about things than you ever would care to know about, right?
Oh, yeah. And actually, that's one of the really cool parts about the job is, just being able to find out which number it is. You need to know about all these things. And it isn't just these machines that I do. It's a few other things. Mm-hmm. And it's a good chance for me to hit up Wikipedia and, surf the net and look up all kinds of books and stuff and really dive into all these things that I'm learning about.
That's cool.
And importing. It's really cool.
Do you use Japanese much on your job?
Yeah, actually, because we are a subsidiary of the Japanese company, and I was living over there working with the Japanese parent company for a year. And mm-hmm. that was my training, and now that I'm over here, I think half the staff here. It's a really small office, but half the staff is Japanese, so I speak to them in Japanese.
I see. Cool. So you're actually getting used to it every day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. That's cool. That's cool.
So what about you? Why don't you explain
Oh, okay.
what your job is?
Yeah. So I'm a what's called an escalations engineer for a storage company's support network. So basically, what I do is so I work for a company that creates it's one of the top three storage computer companies. In other words, they make hardware that's specific, not for like, say, for example, like routing or desktops or whatever, or servers. This is pure storage. So this is like, for example, petabytes of storage that like some company might have, where they can, store movies or store whatever data that they need.
Okay.
So everything from small operations, several hundred gigs to a few terabytes, to like, 100 terabyte systems.
Yeah.
With an OS that makes everything super, super fast when it's working. And my specialty with that is I'm sort of a generalist. I sort of fix everything, but I focus on performance. So a lot of my day, and I work with a specialty team that kind of focuses on like our top clients. So basically, I'll be a lot of my day begins with I walk into the office and someone runs up to me going like with all these papers on fire, screaming like, "Bank so and so is down. I need you to get this and make them up like 4 hours ago." And I'm like, "Okay,
You
let's
tighten
do
up
this."
like your headband thing, you're like, let's fix this.
Yes, there's an 80s montage every time I have to actually carry my boots with me, and then I put on the boots slowly and lace them up, and then put the knives in the pockets and things. And so since my specialty is performance, it's usually things like, things are slow. Our database is slow. Find out why it's slow. And it could be anything from, and then I go in basically like at that point, it actually turns into an episode of Dr. House. Like honestly, House MD. Although I'm not as sarcastic or what's the word I'm thinking over? Inhumane and antipathic as he is, though. But not that all clients lie or anything like that. There's always the what we hear, is the issue, that we get deep into it and find out that the issue is far more complicated than we could ever imagine, and we have to do all this research for different parts. A million things are suggested. We do a million things to fix it, and then in the end, it's usually just like this one thing to the left that everyone forgot about. A host, Windows lupus or something that is causing all these things. So, yeah, it's really interesting in that every day I'm sort of using my brain. But it can be trying because I work for 10, sometimes 12 hours a day in front of a computer, using my brain, solving problems all day long, usually with a sort of intensity behind them. And then I come home, eat, and then it's like I just want to stare at a wall. I just want to watch the Japanese dramas and then go to sleep. But I end up instead.
It seems like we're both very like our stress loads are very similar, because it's the same thing. I'm there 10, 11, 12 hours a day. The client needs this entry to be cleared, and they need their cargo stat. I'm like,
Yeah.
frantically.
Yeah, for me, for you, it's like 10 tons of things need to be unloaded yesterday. For me, it's like, a financial system, a stock trading application it has to get faster now, So, yeah, it's kind of crazy. Sometimes I kind of like, man, it'd be so nice if I could get paid the same to be just like a janitor. That'd be awesome. I'd be the best damn janitor, and then I could go home and have all this brain. Yeah, whatever. I'd just get my ass kicked out.
And actually that's how I started doing the work on the ninja game. Was I was actually unemployed at the time, and I kind of needed something to do, and then I was working on that, and then that's where most of the work got done. And then and the right when I was talking to the publisher, the Japanese publisher, about putting it out in America, that's when I got the job. And then right when it was like starting to move into reality, then reality kind of
Reality took over and said, "I got you here. All right, you're gonna have a career. Yeah, now you're getting married. All right, now you're gonna, yeah." That's awesome. Yeah, for me, it's sort of similar to me too. When I began Tenra years ago, some 7, maybe 8 was when I first pushed out the project, and then a little bit after that, got it cleared and all that. I was working at another tech company, which rhymes with Cisco. Actually, it is Cisco, and I was doing kind of support and the like over there as well. And it was a much easier job. In fact, half of it was thinking, half of it was brain dead. So I had a lot of free time to think about the books. And then I switched careers, switched jobs, got a promotion, did some more different work, got a promotion again, learned some new skills, got a promotion. Yeah, one thing led to another, and it's like I'm always in this uphill climb to I'm like, finally someone else understands the exact place I am. He got the same thing. He did a lot of his translation before like career and real life took over, and now he's sort of in the same state that we all are.
Damn it,
the fact that we can't all be Norwegians with our government grants to give us money for translating these games. So one of the things I want to do, I guess maybe we'll wrap up here, is I'll set my lock. Pick a game.
Okay.
And let's talk about a game for like 5 minutes.
Okay. Let's see. Well, I think I'm going to do Ryutama today.
Ryutama. All right. Cool. Yeah. Set the clock and go.
Ryutama. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Ryutama is this really cool game that last year you had mentioned, maybe we should look at another game to work on. And I was like, hey, I'm reading Ryutama right now. Let's just do this. It looks pretty simple, and it is kind of simple, mm-hmm. but it's really different in that it's like a Ghibli game mixed with like old school D&D
Yeah, I actually call it Hayao Miyazaki's Oregon Trail.
That's what I was looking for, and that's how I kind of explain it to people. You are pretty much about as likely to die from the weather as you are from a dragon attack or whatever.
Exactly, a spear from an orc. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so people are probably, well, I mean, a lot of people actually do know about it, but so Ryutama means dragon egg. And it basically it calls itself natural fantasy. Yeah, RPG. It basically it sort of plays itself up. It's a very natural, I don't want to say hippie-ish, but it's got this feel like if you look at it, it's got this sense of like, Ghibli anime or like the 1800s era naturalism sort of feel to it. And basically the thought behind it is that the players have characters and they're traveling around the world. Meanwhile, there's a GM, there's a dragon the GM plays as a character, like with its own sheet and everything. Correct me if I'm wrong, he follows the players around, writes their stories into like a journal, and then shares the journal with the seasoned dragons to keep the world going.
Yeah, basically, like dragons in this world, there's dragons for all sorts of different natural phenomenon, like cloud dragons, mountain dragons, etc.
And not really like evil dragons and good dragons,
right?
Mostly
yeah,
just natural.
Yeah, they're just natural. There really isn't any good or evil, in this world. But each dragon, for them to grow, they subsist on stories, and that are fed to them by the dragon people. Which are the GM, what you mentioned that they follow them. It's not that they necessarily are part of the party or
they sort of watch them like from afar. In fact, I kind of joked in front of the author, like he mentioned, he explained this to a new player at the table that yes, they follow you and they may or may not be that figure behind the corner. Mm-hmm. That's watching you, and I'm like, oh, so they're stalkers. And that kind of drew a laugh out of them, but yeah, they are sort of stalking the party in a nice way.
And actually, once the GMs hit a certain level, and that's one of the cool things, is that the GMs actually have a character. Once the GM character hits a certain level, they have the ability to shapeshift into like a certain animal or whatever, so that that goose that's always flying overhead or whatever, that's the GM.
Yeah, it could be the GM that's following. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I also like how the GM has, they got their own character sheet. They level up as, and their experience points are basically the stories, the number of sessions. Mm-hmm. But they also have powers. You can, basically they have like a pool of MP in which they can be like, okay, that roll there, that was a crit. they can only do it a few times per session, but it's very interesting the fact that the GM is supposed to be an adversary, creating challenged and stuff like that. But the dragon that they also play is also supposed to help them out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool because it really facilitates just making the story interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And helping the players, you know, in a lot of Western games, you know, if the players miss a role, then, you know, then they miss out on something. But this really gives the GM a real mechanical way of making up for that, or making sure that, you know, that the session is, you know, fun.
Yeah. Definitely so. It's very interesting. I know a lot of the folks in story games and stuff like that are very interested in it. And some of the people who have, like my friends like Clinton Nixon and Jason Morningstar and others, I'm actually running a campaign of it now for some friends, and we're on the eighth session. It's very weird because it seems like that story games folks would love it, but it doesn't have any of those core story games rules to it. Like you don't have anything that affects the story or anything mm-hmm. like that. It's just you have to do a lot of fiat, you have to do a lot of makeup work, and mm-hmm. You have to basically flex your GM skills a little bit, maybe grow in that area.
Yeah, even like the scenario creation, you know, you really have to have like sort of like an old school mindset when you make it.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like, you know, a lot of the story games that are being put out, you know, it gives the players a lot of agency and whatnot, and there's none of that in this game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was another thing I noticed, where you basically have no, you know, like you in combat or something like that, you roll a bunch of dice, you hit, okay, you did one damage. This is taking a while. Can I do something like, can I spend a happiness point? And like, no, none of that shit in this game. No.
Yeah.
It's old school. You're going to get a TPK from poisonous bees. I noticed that, and that was really tripping me out. I had a real cognitive dissonance about this game, but I just love it. It just emerged victorious.
Yeah, but I think that's one of the really great things about it. It is like it kind of doesn't need all those you know, new age hippie story game things mm-hmm. that are really great. But it's, I mean, just because the focus is not on combat like mm-hmm. a lot of the old school stuff is. You know, it's just like story games. The focus is on, you know, the interaction between the players and between the players and the world around them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's where everything comes from. And just like the story games, you know, you're experiencing the story more than you are more than the rules.
Yeah, totally. And yet there's no like rules to drive story. It just happens naturally, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's been about 5 minutes on that. Any last thoughts on that? What's one of your favorite things about the game?
I think that it's not a murder hobo game. more than combat, the focus to me is all about the wonder of experiencing a new, beautiful scene of nature, I guess. Yes. I think that is what really draws me to it.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Similar for me too. I like the fact that, I guess in that part, that's like one element where the rules actually do back it up. You get very little experience for conquering monsters. You get a ton of experience for actual traveling in harsh conditions.
Right.
But yeah, the for me, I don't focus so supremely much on nature as much as the next town to travel to where they interact with many people. And sure, there's combats. There's definitely combats. There's definitely struggles and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's all about like the new town they reach and the people they interact with.
Yeah.
As for me, I think my favorite. Well, yeah, I think that's got to be one of my favorite parts as well. If I had to pick one more, I would say I always look for in games for things that sort of bend my mind or something new that just never had been around or never was around successfully. And for me, that in real time, it was the whole idea of the GM creating a character, a GM PC that isn't that has rules completely different from all the other player characters. So it's not like a Mary Sue PC.
Right. That's not a GM PC.
Exactly. So it's not one of those characters that comes along and saves your butts all the time. Even though they have little save you powers and stuff like that, they have a completely different leveling scheme. They have a completely different power scheme. They have completely different attributes. And the fact that Like, for example, if there's two green dragons and one's carrying a torch and one's carrying a sextant, you know, they're each color of dragon has three objects that they can carry, and based on those objects the actual campaign or feel of a campaign or rules change.
Yeah.
That was mind blowing to me. I was like, yeah. Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, and actually, you know, the different types of campaigns, you know, they're color coded into the different types of dragons that you can play as.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
Yeah, there's lots to love about the game. I think what we'll probably have to do is then devote an entire session just to going off on that game. Mm-hmm. there's so much to talk about. Maybe we can bring a friend in to back us up make it so it's not like just the only two guys in the world that didn't know about this thing spinning yarns about it. Luckily, so we actually assisted in when you were still in Japan and I was over here, we helped some people get a hold of the very few physical copies left of the game. There's just there were none left in Japan. We raided between you and you there on foot and me over the internet. We raided every single place that carried physical copies.
I even asked the author himself.
Yeah, the author's like, I got one copy, dude. and basically helped people in the US get their hands on a copy if they wanted one, with the consideration that if you tipped, you know, you tip Matt and you get a copy of the English rules, or at least the, you know, just the core rules, not all the extra stuff. And so some folks like my friend Lucas has been playing pretty heavily every time as well. And
his games sound really awesome.
Especially since, you know, he had the book, so he had the visual cues that the art brought, and he had our rules. He did not learn from the author. He did not learn from a peer who showed him how to run it. He just ran it himself, and it sounds like it was really successful. I really want to hear about people's complaints or at least failures with the game, if there are any, because I just always want to, you know, put the bad with the good so that we have like a sense of who a game might appeal to.
Yeah.
But at this point, everyone's just kind of loving it too much.
Yeah.
I need to get a cynical asshole to play the game, I guess.
Yeah. I'm sure that there's a large swath of power gamers and whatnot that probably wouldn't be interested, but.
Yeah. And on the other hand, there are people that say, I like it because it is, in a way, it is sort of a power game. If the dice are cold, you die. If the dice are hot, you win.
Yeah.
Especially things in combat and stuff like that. There are no hippie savior powers of like, oh, can I take additional stress, or can I jeopardize my girlfriend in order to you know, make a crit roll? No, you don't. You roll the dice, and the dice say you all fall to death. You know, rocks fall, everyone dies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, I think that covers up a good chunk of time for a first episode. Maybe we'll think of a name for this thing other than the JRPG podcast.
Hopefully by the time it goes up it'll have a name, and
well or we can come up with, maybe we'll get suggestions from people or something.
And speaking of which, you know, if there is something that anybody wants to hear about, or like it, you know, like a section that you would like us to do in every episode, just let us know, and you know, we can accommodate.
Yeah, we have no ideas for formatting. The only thing I've got in my mind is to get Aaron in on an episode or two, and then maybe a couple other guys as well. But we're completely open on that front. Oh, and speaking of the sound and stuff. So what's up with Hall & Oates?
Oh man, I don't know. This morning I got back from my test, and I was like, you know, I looked over my wife. I was like, you know what? I think we need to listen to this. And I just turn on Hall & Oates on the TV, because I have this really cool TV where I can watch YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Just hit up Hall & Oates and just left it on all day. I just, oh man, yeah, they're pretty great.
so Out of Touch in particular, huh?
Yeah, and they have a lot of good songs, Man Eater.
Classic 80s man. Yeah. I don't know what it is about Hall & Oates either, but I'm a huge fan of Out of Touch as well. Mm-hmm. There's something so rich and 80s about that whole song.
It was just well written.
Yeah. It's one of those that now, oh god damn, now it's stuck in my head.
my wife was asking me what the lyrics are about, you know, because her English isn't all that great.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, they're talking about life and all the secrets of the universe and all that stuff. She's like, really? I was like, yeah. Can't you just feel it?
I think if I start reading the lyrics instead of just singing them, I'll probably feel embarrassed as well. All right, man. Well, it's great talking to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll sync up again.
Cool.